horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour three at the races. And if you hadn't connected the dots, the clown in Dallas I'm referring to, Skip Bayless, who's just, I mean, I get having an act, you know, having a shtick. I get that, you know, I mean, we've got our game and our game has, you know, there's shtick. I get it. and Casey with a great line saying, calling Bayless a clown is an insult to clowns. And that's true. That's fair, Case. Good job. But come on. You're just doing it to get a rise out of people. I don't know. I don't know what it is. You know, you would think that there's enough that sports is provocative enough to, you know, just discuss it intelligently and have it be provocative, right? You would think. Speaking of provocative, by the way, everybody loves the opportunity to look ahead to these Louisiana cards, notably Fairgrounds. You got all week. You've already had a couple of days to dig into the LeCompte card on Saturday, and it's really going to be fun. Just pray that the weather holds up in New Orleans, you know, which can be, you know, can be a little challenging, to say the least, at this time of year, because you've got a really nice, not just the stakes action. The stake action is terrific, but there's also some very good maiden races in addition to the stakes. And I'm just reaching for my list of, by the way, speaking of stakes, I've also got to give you the latest morphing of that Pegasus field, both of them actually, because they're moving around pretty good. And since I'm having trouble finding my PPs with Fairgrounds, quick highlight for the Pegasus field. There were three horses that were officially put into the body of the race: War Story, Diamond Oops, and True Timber. They had been those invited alternates. And now there's three more that have been added either as invites or as potentially coming. Tenfold, Midcourt, who's very interesting, and Bodie Express, who we kind of, you know, had been sort of hanging around and expected to involve. So here's your field as of right now. Here's the field of 12, Omaha Beach, Higher Power, Mr. Freeze, Seeking the Soul, Spun to Run, Tax. Now the other half that is really kind of really a set of fresh faces, more or less: War Story, Diamond Oops, True Timber, Tenfold, Midcourt, Bodie Express. So, interesting set of horses. And there was also news that Giftbox, John Sadler and Costa, already coming with Higher Power. And Giftbox originally had been involved on the invite list and then said that they were thinking of going elsewhere. Now things are morphing to the point where it looks like Giftbox may stay home and target the big cap. Saw that somewhere yesterday or this morning. So there it is. And then on the turf side of things, there's been the addition of Sacred Life and Admission Office from the reserves into the body of the race, which right now on the turf: Arklow, Magic Wand, Henley's Joy, Next Year's, Sadler's Joy. A lot of joy in this race. Henley's Joints, Allard's Joint, Channel Cat, Instilled Regard, Mo Forza, Invading, Without Parole, Zulu Alpha, Sacred Life, Admission Office, and then I see where Synchrony, Tusk, and American Tattoo were added as new invitee reserves to assure that they get a dozen for the Pegasus turf. All right, there you go. We're still looking to connect. Speaking of midcourt, looking to connect with John Scherfs and also with Linda Rice. But in the meantime, we'll get a visit in with the aforementioned John White. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I want to wish a happy birthday to Bob Baffert, who I've known for many years and has been certainly just an absolutely a trainer who has broken a lot of records and so forth. And in fact, he's on the brink of another milestone with the win yesterday by Mother Mother. Baffert now at 2,996 career thoroughbred wins, so he's four away from 3,000. And, of course, he's got a whole pile of quarter horse wins, too. I spent some time this morning trying to find out how many quarter horse wins, but as typical in horse racing, when we don't have an Elias Sports Bureau, trying to find information like that often proves frustrating and futile. So I don't know how many quarter horse victories for Baffert, but it has to be a pretty good number there, too, to be piled on top of his almost 3,000 wins. And you were talking earlier about that Cavenier narrow loss to Grindstone in the Kentucky Derby. I remember talking with Baffert about that once, and he said the same thing to me in terms of, and when he talks about it, you can feel his emotion. He goes, I would never get back to the Kentucky Derby. And I mean, it makes total sense. I mean, he's very realistic, Mr. Baffert. And so to lose by a scant nose with Cavenier, and you're thinking, man, that probably was my one chance to win the Kentucky Derby, and you lose by a whisker. But the thing I remember the most in my discussion with him about that was he said that about a week later, he received a letter in the mail from William T. Young, the owner of Overbrook Farm, the owner of Grindstone. And, of course, that was before we had email. We actually had mail back in those days. And he opens the letter, and Mr. Young writes this moving letter to Bob Baffert saying, I know you must be very disappointed about not winning the Kentucky Derby, especially losing by such a small margin, but your horse ran well. You should be congratulated for the job you did, and I'm sure you'll be back to the Kentucky Derby, and I'm sure you'll win a Kentucky Derby. And I'll never forget when Baffert told me that, because a behind-the-scenes classy gesture like that, to me, we used to have a lot more of that in this sport before the sport kind of turned into more of a cutthroat business. And that was a Bob Lewis type thing. You know, that was another thing about Mr. Lewis. He was that classy. We've had some real classy people in this game, and certainly William T. Young has to be one of them, to take the time and effort to send a letter to Bob Baffert after Baffert had narrowly lost that Kentucky Derby. So that was a story Bob Baffert once told me that I'll never forget.
Now, I've heard now... This is about the third or fourth incantation, actually, additional anecdote about it. That's pretty cool. I've also heard that we'll let Haskin handle this. I've also heard that he was sure that no matter how many times he watched the finish and how many times they show the photo, that Cavenier won. That he was absolutely convinced for a long time. I don't know if at any point, that he couldn't. Not that he wouldn't accept it, but he wasn't really sure that he hadn't. You know, the Cavenier hadn't won. So
another memory I have of that is In those days, I would pop into San Anita on Tuesdays and get PPs for Wednesday. That was back when we raced on Wednesday. And Brad Free often would be working in the press box, and a lot of times we'd be the only two people in the whole press box at San Anita on a Tuesday afternoon, and we would chat about this and that. I was with the simulcast TV there, and plus the Fox 2. We used to have a show called the Fox 2 Show that we would show two races each day from Santa Anita on Fox 2 and in 1 hour, and that was became a pretty popular show. I was on that show with Kurt Hoover, and I was chatting with Brad, and Brad was telling me about his future book bet on Grindstone. And Brad was saying, you know, he says, I made the bet a while back, and he says, I think I'd like him even more. You know, I probably ought to bet more on him. And I said, well, why don't you then? And he said, you know what? I think I will. And so he did. And so Brad Free, that was one of his biggest scores, was one Grindstone. So that shows you that, you know, the disappointment for Baffert and his connections, but the win for Mr. Young and Lucas and those connections, but also for Brad Free, because that was a huge future book score for Brad Free.
How about that? I feel like there's a book in this. if we keep going, we'll find more the stories and anecdotes and ties to that momentous derby. Pretty funny.
Ties. You had Jeff Siegel on Friday, and I caught him again on your replay just before you came on to this morning, and Jeff was talking about Jolie Olympica, how, you know, he was looking forward to her United States debut. And I thought it was particularly interesting because Jeff actually owned a filly who was very prominent in the pedigree of Jolie Olympica. She's by Drosselmeyer, and Mike Smith alluded to the fact that it was very meaningful to him to win the Las Cienegas on this filly as a daughter of Drosselmeyer, because Mike Smith had won the Belmont Stakes at the Breeders' Cup Classic on Drosselmeyer. And this was the first Drosselmeyer he'd ridden. So he got an extra kick out of that win. But Drosselmeyer is by Distorted Humor out of Golden Ballet. And Golden Ballet was co-owned by Team Valor back when Jeff Siegel and Barry Irwin were the two protagonists. And Team Valor, Janine Sahadi was the trainer. Golden Ballet had originally started off with Jerry Dutton, but then when Team Valor got involved and so forth, then Janine Sahadi took over, and this was a very nice cowbred filly by Moscow Ballet out of a Slugo Gold mare who won the Las Virginas Stakes back when it was a Grade 1 and the Santa Anita Oaks when it was a Grade 1. She finished second in the Ashland, did not run in the Kentucky Oaks, but then won the Railbird Stakes at Hollywood back when that was a Grade 2.
The Railbird, wow.
And then that was the end of her career, but that was a very nice filly. She won 6 out of 10, never worse than third, and she is the dam of Drosselmeyer, so right there in that pedigree for Jolie Olympica. And this filly is exciting. You know, you think of Richard Mandela and his success in the past with South American horses, like Gentleman from Argentina. But he's also had his share of success, not only from Argentina, but Brazil, because Mr. Mandela has trained the likes of American Grade 1 winners Redditori, Sandpit, Siphon, Balabali, that had come from Brazil. And Fox Hill Farms raced Balabali, and Fox Hill Farms, Rick Porter, the owner here of Jolie Olympica. So this filly, there was many that thought maybe 5.5 on the turf would be too short for her. She won her debut at about 6.5 in Brazil and won it comfortably by daylight. But there were many that thought maybe she would want to go farther. But that's the good news. The way she won this race and the style she won it, and she won really under a very confident ride by Smith. And Smith said afterwards she was just running her best right at the wire and galloped out strong. So this should be a great launching pad for this filly. And, you know, with Vasilika retired, you know, Vasilika's kind of dominated the older grass female division in Southern California for the past couple of years. And now that she's out of the picture, that really leaves a void. It's an opportunity here for someone to step up and kind of become like Vasilika and be dominant in that particular division. So, and at this point, that might be this Jolie Olympica.
Seems like it. 98 buyer for this win, and Mandela off to a very notable start of the season. And got to mention too, John, as we do some review of what went on at Santa Anita over the weekend. Queen BDU, how about the role that Andrew Lerner has got right now with this one?
Boy, and you talk about ultra game. I mean, that was really, if you like a real ding dong stretch battle, you had to love that race as Queen BDU and Dare Lou just. Neither one of them really would give up. I mean, it almost was to the point you'd figure the most deserving outcome would have been a dead heat because it was tough for either one of those to lose. The Queen BDU just so game in this victory here. And what a ride by Ruben Fuentes. We talked about him last week, and I talked about how much talent that young rider has. And if he just minds his P's and Q's and keeps, you know, from heading into that steward's office, which he's been prone to do, but like many young riders, and maybe with some maturity, and as I mentioned last summer at Los Alamitos when I was working as a steward at Los Al, he was in one morning for a ride he had given that he wasn't disqualified, but we had to determine whether to give him days. There was an inquiry, and I just really tried to make the point to him that the more you can possibly stay straight out there, the less trouble you're going to be in and the less you're going to be in this office, and the more trainers will be able to trust you that you're not going to get their horse DQ'd by not staying straight. I mean, it sounds simple, and I know these aren't machines, and I know they're animals, and they're running fast, and, but you've got to make every effort you can to stay as straight as you possibly can, you know, or you're going to be in the steward's office all the time, and you're going to be getting days all the time. So, but this was a brilliant ride by Fuentes. He went up there on the inside, on the backside, kind of an early move, but didn't overdo it. He had made sure he saved plenty for the stretch run, which, as evidenced by the outcome of the race. And this mare has just blossomed here. I mean, as you say, what a job for Andrew Lerner and his team. And she's now rattled off three straight wins. As you mentioned, when we had talked about her before, she was so impressive in that Betty Grable at Del Mar. And then she got a grade three victory at Los Alamitos in the fall in the Bayacoa. And she won both of those races very impressively by pretty good margins. And here she showed that in a real battle, she would get the victory in another grade three race. And, you know, what's kind of neat about this, she's now raced 33 times. I mean, pretty durable daughter of Old Topper here out of a Touch Gold mare. And she started off, her first career start was in September of 2016 for a maiden 32,000 claiming race at Los Alamitos, in which she finished third. And that's kind of a neat story here when you think of starting off at that level and now at the age of six winning a grade three race like the La Cañada.
Well, and now we'll turn the attention to the Santa Monica, this long-running sequence, of course, for the fillies and mares at the start of the season. Some other spots as well. John, from the weekend, modest maiden winner turf sprinting, She's So Special. That was Rosario for Peter Miller, for Gary Barber. You also had, there was another, was that yesterday, I think? That might have been yesterday. Where did I?
That was Saturday.
So Saturday, okay. All right.
And Saturday's... by the way, one other follow-up to that. Bacchignata, there was a key scratch
Spice,
out of that
Spice
race.
Perfection.
And Spice Perfection, who I had made the 5-2 morning line favorite. And Steve Anderson reporting that Spice Perfection headed to Florida to run in the Grade 2 Inside Information at Gulfstream. So that was why Spice Perfection was withdrawn from that race. So Inside Information, Mulvorza, and Texas Wedge all heading to Florida for the Peter Miller Barn. And Miller has been absolutely just red hot here at Santa Anita.
No doubt. The other one of the other performances from the weekend that and this gets back to Baffert, that McHale on Friday in the allowance race and that 6.5. And I know 6.5 is a funny distance when it comes to figure making, but a 97.
Yeah, he didn't break all that sharp, and then he rushed up and got the lead. And that's one of those I keep fastidious statistics on. In terms of how many correct favorites I have as a boarding line maker. And then but when I lose one like that, where I made a different, I made Royal Trump the favorite, and it was close, but, you know, and then I really feel stupid when I have a horse, other horse than Babbert, and it goes favored and wins, and I sit there and go, why did I do that? But you got to make those decisions at the time, and not every Babbert horse goes favored, of course, but... but that was a nice win, certainly for McHale. And he, 6.5, he was getting a little late there at the end to hold on by a half. But that was a good effort for sure. And that Baffert Barn's clicking along pretty good here right now. And I don't imagine it's going to take him very long at all to get to that 3,000 thoroughbred level.
Well, I haven't looked ahead. I haven't. Have they... are they, in terms of the schedule right now, John, are you running? Not
yeah, we
run
have a seven Thursday race start
or?
On Friday.
Friday, yeah.
And then Cal Cup Day is Saturday. That's going to be a big card with should be some pretty good sized fields, a lot of stakes races. So that's going to be a card to look at. Of course, that's going to be a card I got to look at for Beat the Host. As Johnny D mentioned, I've been in it from the beginning. Jeff Siegel and I are the only two, because for the first several years of Beat the Host, there were only two hosts that it was.
Right,
Jeff
you
Siegel.
Went back and forth. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
we
right.
Would, we would alternate, which I'll be honest, I'm kind of glad, because that's just kind of one less thing on off
that's
my
exhausting,
plate at
yeah.
a busy time of the year for me. But and I'm glad it opens it up for a lot of other hosts, actually like yourself. So, and Johnny D himself, so that's good. And then we'll race Sunday and Monday as well. Now, we've gotten off to a very good start here at Santa Anita weather-wise, other than having to delay the opening, which turned out to be really the right move for sure. I think there's about a 99.9% agreement on that, which is very rare in horse racing to have that kind of agreement. But I think... there aren't really any dissenters in that Santa Anita made a very good move to stay away from the bad weather that was going to be there for opening day and instead open on a nice Saturday and have a mega card like they did. So it all worked out well. And we've been dry ever since, but they're predicting rain here, and they're predicting it pretty emphatically for Thursday. In fact, normally they don't have training at Santa Anita on the main track on Tuesdays, and they're going to allow it on Tuesday because they know they're probably not going to have any training on the main track on Thursday. There are two turf races on Friday, and around here, not only do we not race on the turf on the day that it rains, but we rarely race on the turf the day after it rains. So for any of your people handicapping the Friday card, which I've only just started to do, keep that in mind when you're doing the two turf races, because to me the chances are kind of strong that they're not going to actually be run on the turf. So you might want to look at those races in that context. So that, you know, and last winter was such a aberration really in terms of, and I mentioned it on your show many weeks, I kept saying, you know, this is very unusual, because not only did we have an extremely wet winter, but the timing was at its worst. I've talked to a lot of track superintendents about this type of thing, even going back to Steve Wood, who used to be the track superintendent at Santa Anita. And it isn't just the fact that it rains, but it's what kind of rain it is and when it happens. And, you know, whether it's kind of misty or a drizzle versus a downpour, a lot of times I've been told the track superintendents would prefer a quick burst that if they had a track sealed, which we're going to start getting away from the sealed tracks anyway. But when they were going through the sealed track times era, that they could get a track sealed. And if you got a quick rain burst, you know, we're one of those like we've seen at Churchill Down sometimes in the spring on Derby Day.
Saratoga. Derby Saratoga
Day.
Gets them. Saratoga.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
It's the best example.
That's right. Exactly. And so that water, and it just runs off the track. They can open the track back up and go about their business. So, but if you get one of those lingering storms, and last year at Santa Anita, we just, it was like the worst possible. It would rain like practically every weekend. And in the past few years, we've been lucky at Santa Anita. Even when we got the rain, it was often early in the week when they weren't racing. And so, you know, it didn't have that much of an effect on the cards as we got later, you know, toward the weekend. And but last year was just the absolute worst scenario you could have. And that played a big role on what happened at Santa Anita. There were other factors, but that was a major factor right there. So, you know, I figured that the way, being a handicapper, the way I handicapped the weather for this Santa Anita meet was we'd probably get more back to normal, which would be not having like week after week after week of these major rainstorms. And so far, that's proven to be the case. And even in this case, they're only predicting rain really for Thursday rather than one of these where, and that was another thing last year, we would get these storms and they would be like, 2-3-4 day storms where it would rain 2-3-4 days straight, and I mean pour. So you know, at least hopefully we get that rain on Thursday, the rain gets out of here, and the most important thing at this point for this week would be to have a nice weather situation and racing conditions for Saturday, as I say, because that should be a very nice card for California Cup Day, Cal Cup Day.
Well, ahead of that, mentioning that Friday card, it's just a seven race card, but there happens to be, it just happens that you've got a maiden race, a turf sprint for older maidens, including, you know, some 5-year-olds. And there's a couple of very prominent pedigrees that are involved in here, including Samantha Siegel, who, Brian Corner sends out once in a blue moon. And this is Samantha's homebred by Malibu Moon, a 5-year-old now, who was gelded last April out of the wonderful Include Me Out, who was a terror herself. I mean, she was a multiple grade one winner, Include Me Out. And I think she has struggled a little bit as a broodmare. Corner actually dropped this gelding in at Los Al in a quarter horse race.
Yeah, mixed race, that's right. Yeah, 870 yards and was well bet in that race, and really was not a factor in that race. So, and as I say, as you mentioned, this is scheduled to be a grass sprint, but don't be surprised
if it comes off
a dirt sprint coming out of the rain on Thursday. That's certainly a possibility that this race could end up being on the dirt. So,
well, this has got to be a frustration for, and Samantha, you know, takes the good with the bad as well as anybody. There's also Mandela sending out the Cheyenne 4-year-old colt for a debut, Odysseus. And of course, you see that name and you think about the ill-fated Odysseus that Satish campaigned with Padua, Tom Albertrani trained, and gosh, a horse that had some very bad luck and died, you know, prematurely. This is a candy ride out of the very nice Charm the Giant. So this would be a a sibling of Liam the Charmer.
Yeah, bred by Ron and Deborah McAnally.
Right.
As Charm the Giant's been a very good broodmare, and this is a very good family. That's a nice pedigree for this colt, who sold for $200,000 at Keeneland. So the McAnally's put this one up for sale at the auction ring at Keeneland, and that's a pretty good number to draw there, $200,000. So, as you say, that's an intriguing entrant in that race as well to help spice up the Friday action.
I'll tell you what, the broodmares in this, just looking at this, it's funny. Charm the Giant was a Wilshire handicap winner, and Include Me Out won, among other things, the Marge Everett. There's the Hollywood Park casting a long shadow over this group.
Indeed. So we'll look forward to racing resuming here on Friday I'm glad to see a seven race card. You know, there was a real resistance to this for a while, but Del Mar, I think, helped a lot last summer when they had a number of seven race cards. So there's nothing wrong with a seven race card. I'll be honest with you, to some extent, as a fan, and I'm just speaking as a fan now, in many respects, I'd just as soon have like a 7 or 8 race card than these 12, 13, you know, these 11, 12, 13 cards that just go on and on. If you're at the track, it just seems like, you know, you're getting up in the morning and going right to the track and spending your whole day. I mean, whereas when you have like a 7, 8 race card, I mean, you can do other things on the same day besides just go to the races. So, and I mean, there's plenty of other options. So, and look, if you've got the horses and you can do it, it's fine, but I'm just speaking for myself and those marathons. And it's one thing when it's Kentucky Derby day or it's the Breeders' Cup or something. Yeah. I mean, look, when it's a huge day like that, but even those days, you know, you feel like, I remember being at the Preakness for HRTV, and you sit there and you just think, you know, it's just race after race after race after race after race. And, I mean, you're almost worn out by the time you get to the Preakness, for Pete's sake. So, you know, I just feel like sometimes you can kind of overdo things. And I like to see a seven race card kind of thrown into the mix here. It's not the end of the world.
We have no choice. Under the current circumstances, you're going to do the best you can.
And it helps your horse population. I mean, you're not draining it by trying to force in an eighth race. You know, that's a race you can use on Saturday or Sunday. You know, in other words, that's a race by not using it on Friday. You can put in your holster and use on a card to make a nice 10-race card or 9-race card. So, you know, you don't want to shoot all your bullets at once. And, you know, it's like I understand trying to have 10 races at Santa Anita on opening day. That's different. That's a big day, and you're going to have a good big crowd and so forth. But this Friday card, you don't have to have, a bunch of a 7-race card will work very nicely, I think.
There's also, I didn't turn the page as we were talking, but Baffert's got a firster in that same third race by the name of Sky Jumper. That's a Jumpstart gelding that was a $200,000 OBS April purchase 2 years ago. Was slow to get to the races, and I see Dakota Sky, the War Chant mare. So there's partly where the turf concept is coming. However, she was a sister of Pants on Fire, who was a jump start himself. So kind of interesting.
One of my favorite pedigrees, when I do the pedigree research that I found, I got such a kick of, you're sitting here kind of burning the midnight oil at night, going through these pedigrees sometimes. And we've got a horse called Liar Liar, and it's a sibling to Pants on Fire. And I just got such a kick out of that when I saw that Liar Liar is a sibling to Pants on Fire. Liar Liar, Pants on Fire.
I'm looking at Cabo de Noche, who's Pants on Fire's dam, and I'll look up this, because Dakota Sky, she was a 2-time starter, and her career ended early. And yet, boy, it's interesting. It's so funny about pedigrees. You look at this dam, Pants on Fire by Jumpstart, came out of, it was second dam, second foal, and it made $1.6 million. Louisiana Derby, Pegasus winner, Skipaway winner, Monmouth Cup, ACAC, and then in a couple of quite a few listed stakes as well. And the rest of the, there's just she hasn't gotten anything close to that.
Yeah, sometimes they since. Just you get that one in there.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Interesting. Well, speaking of big cards, John, and before we wrap up, I wanted to get a couple of notes in from around the. You might as well spend the last 10 minutes. For those that haven't looked ahead to Fairgrounds, I was alluding to what's going on there. They've got a 13 race card on Saturday that you can get in front of, including a big full field in the LeCompte. And here's our first step on the road to the Louisiana Derby. And of course, you got the new distances that the configuration of the run-up to the Louisiana Derby. So the LeCompte, a mile and a 16th ahead of the Risen Star and the mile and 3/16 Louisiana Derby. Big, bulky field, including Mr. Monomoy in here for Brad Cox. And you've got far outside Lynn's Map. People have been kind of waiting for the return of Lynn's Map off that good win in the slop at Fairgrounds and the maiden win at Churchill. And, of course, Mark Cassie sends out. Cassie's also got a Jack Oxley, the Tappet out of Just Whistle Dixie and Forcible, making the three-year-old debut. Joe Sharp with the nice Street Sense Colt. Sycamore Run that was a first-out winner as well. Nice mix in here. Maker for Calumet. New Eagle, a Street Boss colt as well. Scabbard makes his three-year-old debut for Eddie Keneally out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, fourth, of course, and so on and so forth. Finnick the Fierce as well. Down inside, Ray Hernandez coming out of the good second-place finish behind Silver Prospector in the Kentucky Jockey Club. One thing that's amazing about this field, if you haven't looked at it yet, is how many horses are coming off wet track performances. And that includes Lynn's Map, Sycamore Run, Shake, Shake, Shake Me Up, Bango for Greg Foley, Enforceable, Silver State for Asmussen, and then New Eagle is 7, Accession is 8, and Mr. Monomoy and Finnick, 10 of the 14 are coming off of wet track performances, John, which makes for a very tricky read.
Well, you say tricky. I have already looked at that race, and it is wide, wide open to me. I mean, this thing, wow. I'll be interested to see what the morning line maker does in this race, because I do not envy him in any way, shape, or form, first of all, with a 14-horse field. But boy, oh boy, this was a race that was won last year by 4 lengths by War of Will. War of Will, of course, did not go on to win the Kentucky Derby, but he did go on to win the Preakness Stakes for Mark Cassie. Mark Cassie didn't get any favors done for him in the post position draw, as you mentioned. Lynn's Map drawing that 14 hole. One thing they draw so far away from race day that we typically can see a scratch or two out, so that might help a little bit. If Lynn's Map maybe could get a defection or two and move in a little bit, but still, as the word you use a lot, outposted, and Lynn's Map certainly is outposted here. And by Liam's Map, who I'm, you know, Constitution attracted so much attention with his runners in 2019, and deservedly so. In fact, we had a Constitution debut at Santa Anita on Saturday, Constitution Affair for Simon Callahan, who at the top of the stretch, I thought, looked home free. But it's not easy to debut going a mile around two turns, which Constitution Affair was doing. And he did weaken a bit late and finished third. But, you know, these constitutions just, they run at all levels and all over the place, but this Lamb's map has really, you know, I know how much Pletcher thought of him, and I think there was a ton of talent there. There's plenty of pedigree there, so I'm not really surprised that he's having success as a sire, but he's even though I was optimistic about Liam's map as a sire, he's exceeding my expectations, so he's doing so well. But boy, oh boy, this race, Silver State, could be very tough for Asmussen here, and Scabbard, you know, figures to like this bunch a lot more than the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. In other words, he's really taken a class drop in this spot and had run second to Dennis's Moment. That was a very good effort by him in that Iroquois. He was closing pretty strongly in that last 16th. I mean, Dennis's Moment was under wraps, but still, Scabbard came home with good energy in that race and also had finished second to Greenlight Go, who's training in Florida and was the favorite in the Champagne and finished second to Tis the Law. So Scabbard has kept very good company and should be tough in this particular spot. Mr. Monomoy, you know, from the same dam as Monomoy Girl, who is about to rejoin the Cox Barn there in the Midwest to try to get going again in her career, in which she missed the entire 2019 season. But this Mr. Monomoy, you know, who lost a tough decision to Lynn's Map last time out in New Orleans on the sloppy track, that's an interesting observation you make, though, about the vast majority of these horses coming off a performance on a wet track. And as you say, that makes it a tricky race for sure. It's certainly a very interesting race as we get, you know, started on that road to the Kentucky Derby in Louisiana.
Should mention a couple, one horse that I didn't really include, Steve Asmussen, who at this time of year, of course, will, you know, send out just a phalanx of horses in these early three-year-old stakes, trying to, you know, see where everybody stands. Accession, I did mention for Calumet. But Halo again turns up in here for a third career start, and the three-year-old debut has been working along at Fairgrounds. And that was the horse that they had sent up to Woodbine in November for the Coronation Futurity to go a mile and an eighth. So he cuts back and gets going, and I bet you this reconfigured sequence with the mile and a 16th LeCompte, mile and an eighth Risen Star, and mile and 3/16ths, you know, for horses that are more long-winded and have that, you know, that tendency, you know, to be ready, you know, to go November, December, a mile and an eighth, and that obviously is a horse like this Halo again, clearly. So interesting, coming off the synthetic as well. So we got a couple of things.
I thought Sycamore Rim was one to, at least for me, look at, because what did he do wrong in his debut? He
showed
some sharp speed. You know, drew well clear in the final furlong for Joe Sharp, and this is a Street Sense colt. $175,000 Keeneland purchase. You know, being by Street Sense, I certainly figure he's got every right to stretch out. I mean, that he's been working well. He's got a 47 and change bullet drill on a good, on a wet track. You know, it's your word you use, tricky, it really is the key word for this race, because this is a perfect example. Sycamore Run, did he win that race the way he won it largely because other horses didn't particularly like the slop and he really, you know, did like the slop, or a combination of that, or, you know, is he the real deal? And, you know, that's one of the things we're going to find out.
That's
but
the read you got to make.
Kind of a price, he'd be one I would kind of look at. And everybody's going to be, I think, a decent price in this race, because I don't think anybody's going to get bet too much in this race.
Well, Scabbard will, you know, Scabbard obviously off the running lines is going to be the focus. Start from there and then spread out. You got the Silver Bullet Day leading in as well, and of course the road to the Fairgrounds Oaks, which for so long has been so productive, leading to the Kentucky Oaks. Finite in here, the Goldenrod winner, the Munnings homebred for Ron Winchell. She'll be the focus here. Smallish field, which is a little surprising given how popular the Fairgrounds Oaks run has been. You got a field of eight in the Silver Bullet Day, which right now is not graded. Looking at an ungraded version of the Silver Bullet Day. Same with the Bradley. You got a big full field in the Colonel Bradley, which includes My Boy Jack, the ever-popular My Boy Jack, and Blended Citizen. They're both actually, there's quite a few horses that are cross-entered in this and in the Louisiana, which is holding a grade three. You got the Krantz as well as part of the weekend stakes action. You got some very good maiden races. The Kenner starts the stakes action out, John. Hot Creek Hustle makes the seasonal debut for Vicky Foley. And, of course, last year was basically involved in all of the run-up through the Louisiana Derby. Ran in the Sugar Bowl, ran in the LeCompte, ran in everything, and had such a wonderful year winning the Woody Stevens and just missing in the Jerkins coming out of the Breeders' Cup Sprint, where he posted his first triple-digit buyer, a 103, and it was good enough to be sixth, beaten four lengths, which tells you what you need to know. But Bobby's Wicked One shows up in here, and Joe Sharp brings back the hard-spun colt. I had completely forgotten about Malpay, and the hard-spun colt shows up in here and has been working along for a seasonal debut, had not been seen since getting hurt in the Chick Lang. So great to see Malpay show up. Do Share as well for Norm Cassie. The $2 million Chestertown, the New York bred, out of Artemis Agriterra. Is in an allowance race, so Steve Asmussen kind of spoon-feeding Chestertown a little bit, showing up in a spot like that. Then you've got a couple of maiden specials for fillies, and then the one for colts goes as the eighth. The fillies go as the sixth, and there's a turf maiden group as well. It's a wonderful card Saturday. Really looking forward to we'll probably talk to Marcus, certainly, and we'll see. I'm sure everybody will be making Saturday at Fairgrounds their focus.
Well, and you mentioned the Louisiana Derby with a different distance this year, Mon 3/16. You will be there for that because
I will.
Having to call an audible due to the Mardi Gras.
Exactly. And John, coming up, I'll give a quick glance ahead for you. You mentioned Cal Cup Derby, Oaks, Sprint, Sunshine Millions, Philly and Mare Turf, as well as the unusual Heat Turf Classic going the mile and the eighth, and also the Astra, now grade three, going the mile and a half on Sunday at Santa Anita. So another nice weekend of racing coming up.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Should be a really good card at Santa Anita on Saturday. And I'll have to be not only sinking my teeth into that, as usual, for the morning line, but now for Beat the Host, because the target will be on my back.
Well, Sunshine Millions action, of course, the classic, the Philly and Mare Turf and the Sprint and Turf at Gulfstream, and there'll probably be a couple of good maiden specials as well to consider. So mix and match and put together a good card for everybody for Saturday, John. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
John White, everybody. Post time, John, on this Monday. And we got a little bit of, got our first glance. I wanted to get a little first glance in at Fairgrounds as well. It's going to be a fun week. Looking ahead as well to tomorrow, getting you a couple of quick notes in. I'm hearing from Aaron Crady, who wants to thank everybody for the participation in the TCA Stallion Auction. They sold 200 seasons, and the numbers aren't completely added up yet, but they out-earned and out-raised last year's total. They're pretty sure about that. So thanks to everybody. And I guess last night, Full House sold out at the gala as well, Tis the Seasons, and they had the live auction. So good job, everybody, on that front. And the two guests that we will try to shift to tomorrow, Linda Rice and John Sheriffs. All right? So still plenty to do. Andy Serling as well, of course, and more. I got more here. But, oh, we didn't really. Yeah, I didn't. A couple of other. I'll just save that. I'll save it. Sales. I'm watching the sales. Put that screen up. Let's see what's going on there. Looks like they're rolling along. So, all right. There you go. Monday in the books. I've got. I got to go see the eye surgeon. And we'll convene tomorrow. Thanks for the visit from the Smith brothers. Really fun. Gory and Hammy Smith on the occasion of Ham's 2000th win. Johnny D and John White as well. Thanks to Case. Casey's with me behind the glass the next 2 weeks. Very cool. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.